Historian Kenneth C. Davis on dictators, democracy, and more. 30 years ago, Kenneth C. Davis started something big. He wrote a book called Don't Know Much About History. Its goal, to make history fun and accessible, to highlight overlooked events and people, and to dispel some of the prevalent myths of history. Today, 9 books later, after digging into the Civil War, slavery, American presidents, and the 1918 flu, Davis has a new book out. This one, Strong Man, looks at the rise of 5 dictators and how democracies are vulnerable to despots. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Kenneth C. Davis is our guest today. We'll look at today's turbulent times through his eyes and ask him about the lessons of history. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Author and historian Kenneth C. Davis joins us today to talk about his newest book, Strong Man, The Rise of 5 Dictators and the Fall of Democracy. We will also talk about the 30th edition of his New York Times bestselling book, Don't Know Much About History. And he will share some interesting, mostly overlooked facts about Thanksgiving. And as always, we want you to be part of the conversation. What have you been thinking about right now with the pandemic and the election and the lessons of history? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, that is a different phone number than the one for the pledge drive. So for Maine Calling, call 1-800-399-3566. Ken Davis, welcome back to Maine Calling. It's always a pleasure to have you here. And, you know, I do want to talk about Thanksgiving at some point during this program, but I'm going to start with another anniversary, which is tomorrow, the 75th anniversary of the Nuremberg trials. Why, in your view, is this a very important date to take note of and discuss right now?
Good morning, Jennifer, and it's always a pleasure for me to be with you on Maine Calling as well. And of course, as we hit these anniversaries of what happened in World War II, it only reminds us of the role of these dictators that I write about in Strong Men: Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, 3 of them, of course. All of them tied into the history of World War I very closely. The Nuremberg trials, for those who may have heard of them but not know what they are, were the war crimes trials held. It was a military tribunal held in the aftermath of the war. Hundreds of former Nazis were eventually tried. The trial began on November 20th with the reading of the charges. It opened with a statement by Robert Jackson, a Supreme Court justice who was then appointed by Franklin Roosevelt to go and be the prosecutor at Nuremberg. And his statement is pretty remarkable, and I encourage people to go and find it. You can find it. But he says in that statement, what makes this inquest significant is that these prisoners represent sinister influences that will lurk in the world long after their bodies have returned to dust. We will show them to be living symbols of racial hatreds, of terrorism and violence, and of the arrogance and cruelty of power. And of course, those things don't go away. And Mr. Jackson was pointing that out. So it's very important that when we talk about history and we talk about these important dates and events in the past, we also reflect on what that means in our lives today. We are living in a world of some degree of racial hatred, of terrorism and violence, and of course the arrogance of cruelty and power. Writing this book, Strong Man, looks at this era in world history and talks about how these men come to power, how they accrue that power, how they cement it, and how dangerous it is not only to lives, but to the very idea of democracy, which is under assault around the world and to a large degree in our own country.
Mm-hmm. You talk about a strong man's playbook. What are the elements? What do we see over and over again, no matter what part of the world the strong man is emerging?
Right. It's a very important idea, and it's kind of separated into two parts. First of all, what do they use to come to power? What allows them to take power? Extreme nationalism, and associate that with populism, that often calls for restoring a country's past glory. So we have Mussolini, for instance, the first of the five men I described, recalling an ancient Rome. Italy, in the aftermath of World War I, was destitute, poor, chaotic. It was a constitutional democracy, but barely functioning. He basically said, we need to restore Italy to the greatness of the past. He used symbols of ancient Rome. The fasces, from which his party, the fascists, derived their name, was a symbol from the ancient Roman Republic. It was something that was carried around by an authority, and it was a symbol of power and of justice. In fact, we use it in the United States in quite a number of places. It's right up there in the House of Representatives, the fasces, these rods bound together around an axe head. There's a pair of them on Lincoln's chair in the Lincoln Memorial. So Mussolini also understood this call to the greatness of the past. Placing blame on a single group. Obviously, for Hitler, it was the Jews. Mussolini was pointing to communists, the role of foreigners in destroying Italy. Oh, all of these men often turn to a scapegoat. Warning of an emergency, often non-existent, or heightening the sense of an emergency. Hitler does this certainly in Germany, which is in a disastrous economy, also political chaos in the 1920s. He uses that sense of crisis to alarm the nation. And finally, calls for law and order and eliminating corruption. This is very, very typical. So these are the things that these men, and in this book they are all men. There are very few examples of anyone who would, any women who could be called a strong woman throughout history, but there are some, but nobody on this level. After they have cemented power, after they are in power, they move to control the courts. They heighten the sense of emergency that may not exist. They move to control elections. They create another crisis that demands military intervention or actually start wars, as Mussolini does by going into Africa. Taking control of the media, the enemy of the people, the increasing use of propaganda, the creation of a cult of personality around this leader. Mussolini's picture was everywhere. Hitler's picture was everywhere. Stalin's picture, Mao's picture. These are, of course, the five men, by the way, I should point out, are Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, and Saddam Hussein. So all of these men were able to gain power and then cement that power using this series of techniques, which are widely shared and being used around the world right now by authoritarians.
Kenneth C. Davis, one of the points that you make, and I think it's so interesting, and maybe I'm misreading your book, but one of the points I'm coming away with is that democracies seem especially vulnerable. Am I reading that right? And why is that?
Absolutely. And I go over the history of democracy very briefly in the opening chapter of the book, because it's a word that we take for granted. We use it. We don't really know what it means all the time. People debate, for instance, the difference between a democracy and a republic in the United States, and I'm happy to discuss that distinction. But this is an ancient word that goes back to Greece. It is derived from Greece, essentially meaning the power of the people. In Rome, it was a republic, also a word from the Latin that means of the people. Democracies are fragile. We kind of take them for granted in the United States today. But 2,500 years ago, Plato in the Republic, who he was an Athenian, looking at Athens, and he said that democracy wasn't the best form of government, and it was actually doomed to fall to a tyrant. That was his prediction for democracy. And throughout history, that's often been true. And the founding fathers in the United States, the men who wrote the Constitution, were very, very aware of that. They were aware of the difficulties that democracies had faced because so few democracies or republics had lasted. And that's one of the reasons they were very good scholars of history. But they did point to the Roman Republic as the kind of the epitome of what a republic would be. And that's one of the reasons why a symbol like the fasces from the Roman Republic is used in history. And we have a Senate, which calls back ancient Rome, and a president, also a word from Latin that comes from the Republic. So these ideas of democracy were very important to these men, but it is a fragile thing. And the Washington Post, I read it all the time, loves to say on their front, their motto is democracy dies in darkness. But one of the lessons from this book is that democracy often dies in broad daylight while thousands of people are cheering. That was certainly the case in Mussolini's Italy and Hitler's Germany.
Ken, of course, we're having this conversation in a very in a historic time. We've just had a presidential election. The current president has not yet seated. A new president is supposed to take office in a couple months. What are you thinking about right now, especially after having done all of this research?
Well, let me first be very clear that this book, Strong Man, does not mention any current or past American political leaders, except in the sense that I reference both Abraham and Lincoln and Franklin D. Roosevelt, that in America's two greatest moments of crisis, rather than getting a strong man, a dictator, an authoritarian, we got Abraham Lincoln and then Franklin D. Roosevelt. Now, both men made mistakes, they had flaws, they were imperfect, but they were not dictators. And their traditions and their legacy is of opening up democracy and expanding rights and freedoms, as opposed to a Hitler or a Mussolini destroying rights and freedoms. So that's sort of the background here I want to say to that. But I've been writing and talking about American history for more than 30 years now. And for most of that time, I was very confident, I guess, like most people, optimistic that we were moving very slowly in the direction of more freedom, more rights, more democracy as the society opened up slowly and painfully very often. But in the last, not 4 years, but I would say the last 20 years, I've been very, very concerned about the strength and the vibrancy of democracy in America, partly because we are so bad at elections. I mean, this one was an unusual one in the turnout. But typically in a presidential election, about half of the people don't vote. That's an alarming idea. I think it relates in some ways to the fact that we don't know much about history, as my book was titled 30 years ago. And so that sense of what our history means, what civic engagement means, what our rights and our responsibilities are, has really been lost on this country. And we have seen a number of moves over the past 10 or 15 years to weaken democracy, gerrymandering by both parties, the increased partisanship in the Congress. The suppression of vote is without question been going on for a long time. The Supreme Court decisions in the Citizens United case that allowed this incredible flow of money into the electoral system, and then the overturning the Voting Rights Act, I think have really weakened our sense of democracy. I'm heartened to a degree that so many people did come out to vote in the midst of this terrible medical public health crisis that we're in. So that was a momentary encouragement that I think we have to build on.
Kanasi Davis, there's so much I want to talk to you about when we come back from a break, including the origins of Thanksgiving and also your prior book, about the 1918 flu pandemic. So we do need to go to a break because it is a pledge drive here at Maine Public. But if you would like to talk to Kenneth C. Davis, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. If you send a brief email, that's talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom. UMA.edu.
And we'll be going back to more Maine Calling in just a few minutes, but we are taking this quick break to talk about the importance of membership, to talk about the importance of a free democracy, the importance of access to information, and the importance of supporting public radio that helps bring all of that to us day in, day out. Hello, I am Nick Woodward, the TV production manager here at Maine Public. I am joined by Jennifer Mitchell, a voice you will obviously recognize Maine Public Radio News. Jen, this is a fascinating talk with author Kenneth C. Davis about not just about obviously the dictators, but about democracy in general. And in many cases, it's something we take for granted a little bit here, I think.
Absolutely. I think that we have a tendency to take the news, the truth, that good source, that access to information a little bit for granted here because, for most of us, we've pretty much had it without question. But it's really kind of a good reminder to know that even though there's a wealth of information out there, it's not always good information.
Right.
There are, billions of posts websites out there, blogs, trillions of tweets. I mean, it's all out there. There's a lot of noise. And that's why it's doubly important. It's more relevant than ever to have that trusted source that can help you cut through some of that noise so that you can be informed, so that you can make up your own mind. And that's why we're here, mainepublic.org and 1-800-866-1475 to support that kind of work.
Exactly. 1-800-866-1475. If you appreciate freedom to information, if you also appreciate these conversations that you get on Maine Calling, we'll know that it's made possible through your support. So first of all, we do want to thank folks that have called in, folks like Stephen Sears of Belgrade, Jamie Gordon of Bradley, and Osana of Franklin, just a few of the people that called in today to show their support. We thank you so very much. But if you have yet to do it, and if Maine Calling is something you appreciate, I mean, it's a great example of bringing our Maine community together.
Right, and involving your voice in these thought-provoking, enlightening, illuminating conversations mm-hmm. that take place all around Maine and help connect us to all kinds of topics all around the world. I mean, we've heard so many different things on Maine Calling. I mean, it's a different topic every single, whether it's, cars or...
Well, I have a heat pump because of Maine Calling.
Oh, do you? Okay. Well, yes, the heat pump show. And
yes.
I actually got some information on that as well. And I think that's why I have a heat pump, because you got a heat pump. And you told
right.
me...
Everyone gets a heat pump.
Right, exactly. So we learn so much in ways, very tangible ways, that make our lives better. And that's why we're here. We can only do this kind of work and fulfill this kind of mission with your support here. Why not call? $25 a month, $30 a month, so many different
Whatever
ways
works.
To do it.
1-800-866-1475. You can also text the word give to 800-866-1475 and do it that way. Is Maine Calling part of your day, whether it's the morning version or the night version? Is this a show you depend on? Is it something you appreciate? Would you miss it if it were gone? Well, it's going to be here, but that's why you should call and support Maine Calling. Support what Jennifer Rook, Cindy Hahn, Jonathan Smith, Keith Shortall, the Maine Calling team, what they do each and every day, bringing these conversations, bringing these connections, and they can only do it when you connect with us by calling 1-800-866-1475.
And we know a lot of folks listen to Maine Calling and look forward to it. I see those emails, those messages. messages? Mm-hmm. Can you ask this question of Dr. Shaw? Can you do? We see those all the time. My question to you now is, have you supported this service? Have you done what you can to make sure that this is available, that Maine Calling and programs like it are available to all of us? It's been a very difficult year. It's been a strange year. We know that. And we also know that it's been a year of financial hardship for a lot of people. So if you're in a position and you're lucky enough to be able to make that support right now, it's never been more important than right now to do that.
And if you have never taken the jump to membership, why not change that right now and join us, an evergreen friend? You're a listener. You've heard us talk about this, and we talk about it because it's such a great way to support. Jennifer, I think you're an evergreen friend. I'm an evergreen friend. It's such a convenient thing because we don't have to worry about our support. We join at the level that works for us, $10, $15, $20, $50, $100 or more. Whatever the amount works for you, it's going to work for Maine Public. It's how you know your support is there for Maine Public each and every day, each and every month, the way that Maine Public there is there for you each and every day. So become an evergreen friend and call 1-800-866-1475.
And it feels really good to turn on the radio and just be able to say, just kind of breathe and say, you know, I help
I'm
make this possible.
Yeah.
I am helping make something important and valuable possible for everyone in Maine and indeed across the world.
Everywhere.
On MainePublic.org. So your support right now, your financial gift, is what helps programs like Maine Calling run.
So we're going back to Maine Calling, more of this fascinating conversation with author Kenneth C. Davis. And members, you know you're making it possible. If you want to help make it possible, call 1-800-866-1475 or head to MainePublic.org. And thank you.
Thank you so much.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and we are talking about overlooked and hidden history today. My guest, the author and historian Kenneth C. Davis, his newest book is Strong Man, The Rise of Five Dictators and the Fall of Democracy. That came out last month. Share your comments or questions to email at talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or call us 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Ken, I understand that your book was listed on Best Books for Children in the Washington Post today. Congratulations.
Yes, it was. That was a nice surprise to wake up this morning and find that the book was named one of the best books of the year. And I should clarify there, when it says a children's book, I write for young adults now as well as older adults. And the truth is, the dirty little secret is, the books aren't really much different, except they're a little bit shorter, the type is bigger, and there are more pictures, which doesn't seem to matter to most people who read the books. They don't know that they're written towards a young audience. But I've been so devoted in the past few years of my career to making sure that this education and this material gets into the hands of students that I really tried to change my focus a little bit. And I should point out that I have a great many friends in the Maine educational community. I've spoken to the Maine social studies teachers conference a few times. Those people are absolutely dedicated to making sure their children, their students, understand that history is not just this list of dates and battles and speeches, but it's about taking real facts and real stories of real people and learning what that has to do with our life. Just the way we're talking about strongman has a lot to do with what's going on in the country today, or learning about the Spanish flu of 102 years ago can teach us lessons for today. Teachers understand this really well, and unfortunately they don't always get support from the community and sometimes even their administrators. We have to make social studies, civics, learning history much more important in the lives of our students.
Ken, next Thursday, a bunch of us are going to sit down to turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing, green beans. We think that we're paying tribute to a very special day in American history. What's the truth?
Well, there's a lot of confusion and even mythology about what happened in 1621. But we should point out, first of all, that this is the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the Mayflower. It came to first to dock or anchor off Cape Cod in November of 1620, at which point the men on board signed a document called the Mayflower Compact, which pledged them to a form of democracy. So a very, very important date in American democracy is the arrival of the Mayflower and the signing of that document. Of course, it was limited to the men, 73 men, I believe, and 29 women on board the Mayflower. Not all of them were pilgrims. They, of course, settled eventually in a place they called Plymouth, which was actually a village that had been a Native American village, a Wampanoag village, that had been wiped out by pandemic disease. They called it Plymouth. One of the people who had lived in that village walked into Plymouth a few months later. He comes down to us as Squanto. He spoke perfect English. How? Well, Squanto had been taken prisoner and captive as a slave by an English sea captain. They left that part out of the story when they told it to us as kids. So there's a lot of myth and misconception about this. Most of the Mayflower passengers did not survive the first winter. Only about 40 of the 102 did. And they celebrated a harvest feast in October, not November, of 1621, and that has come down to us as Thanksgiving Day. It is, you know, certainly a story of the resilience of these people who did something extraordinary. It is also the story of the fact that Squanto and those other Native Americans, mostly Wampanoag, who were the uninvited guests at that first Thanksgiving and who brought some venison along, were eventually all wiped out. They were destroyed. Most of them, many of them during a war between the son of the chief who sat down to that first Thanksgiving. The chief's name was Massasoit. His son was known to the English as King Philip. And there was a very bloody war in your part of the world called King Philip's War about 30 years after the first Thanksgiving. It was a very brutal affair.
We're going to go to Mason calling from West Bath. Hi, Mason. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I just would like to touch on a couple of different things. It's an interesting observation on my behalf to see the difference in attitudes between, I guess, the better educated people and the lesser educated people, because it seems like, I mean, I'm in construction, and it's very strange how things have changed when talking to individuals and different people, and how kind of militaristic it's become. And a perfect example would be I'm a union member, and I went to a union meeting last night, and, you know, we're still having a discourse amongst our membership about mask wearing and about voting rights, and because we had a dispute about a Zoom call and who could vote and who couldn't vote, who was present and who wasn't present. And I guess we got to get a grip on this. And I understand how we lost the grip, and I believe it's due completely to social media's influence, but we need to figure out how to get a hold of it, because this is really scary, and it's really damning for this democracy and for this republic if we keep going the way we're going.
Kenneth, to Mason's point, the anger that's out there, the divisiveness and the role of social media in that.
I thank you for the call, and I would first of all say I agree completely, and I think that, you know, without getting into the politics of the election, I think this is, you know, part of what Joe Biden was running on, this feeling that something's terribly wrong and we need to fix it, not just in terms of policy, but in terms of the poisonous mood in the country. I can tell you from, as a historian and looking at, you know, hundreds of years of American history, it's not new. What is different, of course, is social media and the 24-hour cable news situation. That has completely changed the atmosphere. What was once, you know, something that might be whispered or handed out on a Xerox sheet of paper and pasted up on a phone pole is now passed around the country and the world by millions of people through social media. So it's absolutely changed the conversation. It certainly changed the conversation in classrooms. I mentioned speaking to teachers. One of the biggest problems they have to confront, just as we have to confront as citizens, is the problem of misinformation and disinformation and bad information. As a historian, I talk to kids all the time about sourcing. Well, I heard this. Well, where did you hear it? Who said it? How did they document that? That's one of the most important lessons that history teachers, civics teachers, social studies teachers are teaching young people today, is that we have to document where we're getting our information. I do hope that this mood will somehow change. I guess I'm less optimistic now than I used to be, just because of the path we seem to be traveling down. And the caller also mentioned maps. We're kind of all over the place here in terms of what I've written about, but certainly I just want to emphasize, having written a book about the Spanish influenza and 1918, which was very devastating in Maine, by the way, there's no question that masks save lives. They can save your own life, but more importantly, they can save other lives. And we do have a history in this country of sacrifice. When I think about World War I or World War II, when there was rationing and people went off to war, and they went off to war for the duration, that was sacrifice. People sacrificed to get the vote in this country. They sacrificed their bodies and their blood. We are asking people to wear a mask, and it seems like a small sacrifice and certainly not an undue infringement on freedom, just as we ask you not to smoke in your office anymore because it makes other people sick. We ask you to wear a seatbelt because it will save your life and perhaps other lives. So this is it's sad to me that something that is so fundamental to science, wearing masks, social distancing, and washing your hands will save your life and other lives. And it's as simple as that.
May I make one more point?
Ethan, I'm so sorry, but we have to go to a break. I really appreciate your call, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Modern Pest Services, offering a non-toxic approach to pest control with the Anti-C-Mix Smart Pest Control technology, modernpest.com, and by Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks, locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com.
And we'll be back with more Maine Calling in just a few moments on member-supported Maine Public Radio. This is Nick Woodward, TV production manager here at Maine Public, joined by Scott Marshallden, vice president and chief development officer. Scott, this is a fascinating discussion with author Kenneth C. Davis, and just another fascinating conversation that we get with Maine Calling.
It certainly is, Nick, and it's donor support. It's our listeners that have made this possible. And today we're asking you to help us produce shows like this that you're listening to now by calling 1-800-866-1475 or going online at mainpublic.org. And you can also text GIVE, G-I-V-E, to 1-800-866-1475. So many different ways to help support your local radio station, your NPR, your Maine Public Radio. The signal is there for you, and you've been there for us, and we appreciate that. Nick, the wonderful curation and production value of our Maine Calling team highlighted today in their programming. It's timely. It's good conversation, and it brings the public into the conversation, which I think is critical in this day and age.
Absolutely. As Kenneth talked about, democracies are fragile. And a few years ago, I went to Romania, and although Ceausescu wasn't on his list of dictators, they're obviously until 1989 had a democracy. And going there just a couple of years ago to talk to folks, it was incredible to see how important freedom and democracy and information is when you talk to people that didn't have it, some of these folks, you know, as part of their lives. So we truly are blessed here in this country to have this open democracy, and it is something we need to celebrate. And that's why we're celebrating public radio, because public radio is a forum for us to get together, to share, to connect, to find the truth, just to learn more. And that's what's great about Maine Calling. That's what's great about public radio. Also, what's great about public radio is that it's individuals that make it possible. So we are asking you right now, if you believe in the power of the freedom of information, the necessity of conversation, please support us right now. Call 1-800-866-1475.
And you can go online at mainepublic.org, hit that little red donate button, and share your support with Maine Public. Share the reason why you also support Maine Public. We've had people calling in from across the state, from across the country, matter of fact, thanking Maine Public for the work that we're doing, thanking our journalists, thanking our hosts, appreciating the technical experience that we're bringing behind the scenes each and every day. And we've talked about this before, Nick, but such a large geographic state with radio signals, television signals, microwaves all across our fantastic state of Maine to deliver the message, the materials, the content that folks have been appreciating for years and years. For over 50 years, Maine Public has been a vibrant part of the Maine media scene, and we want to be here for 50 more years. And it's donor support that makes that happen. It's days like today where we're asking folks to give. So 1-800-866-1475. Share your support with Maine Public.
Yeah, more and more people are chipping in to support Maine Public Radio. Won't you join the more than 51,000 households who are making Maine Public Radio possible? Most in Maine, but Scott, as you said, these are folks around the country and outside the country that appreciate what Maine Public does so much. They appreciate what you, the members, have helped to build, that they have tuned in. They use Maine Public Radio as their source for information, for conversations, for entertainment, for connections, and they are willing to make it possible. So we're asking you to join this huge family of people, this 51,000 strong, and be the next person to show your support for public radio, show your support for Maine Calling. Call 1-800-866-1475 or go to mainepublic.org.
Hit that red donate button and share your generosity. Honestly, any gift of any size matters. Today, we're asking you, if you're an Evergreen donor, a monthly sustainer, we have over 22,000 folks that support Maine Public monthly. They've budgeted. I'm one of those folks that budgeted for Maine Public. I feel so good about it. My wife and I and our family make Maine Public a monthly priority for our giving. We did that before I came on board at Maine Public, full disclosure, and we're consumers of this wonderful product. Won't you join us and others that have made that happen? If you're someone who can make a gift, we have a Beacon Society, a Beacon level, gifts of $100 or more a month. That's $1,200 or more a year. Won't you consider joining at that level if you can make a gift of that size? The average Beacon level gift is around $2,400. And folks, when they give at that level, we understand that they're giving not only for themselves, but they're giving for their community. And because they can, we appreciate that. There are others that can't make that level of gift, Nick. And so it's warm. It's welcoming when people recognize that and step up and help other families out there. And they can do that by calling 1-800-866-1475, or you can go online at mainepublic.org. We appreciate your support if you've already called in, and thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, History Lessons, Kenneth C. Davis is our guest. He's a best-selling author, and his publisher just released a special 30th anniversary edition of his book, Don't Know Much About History. And of course, his most recent book is Strong Man, The Rise of Five Dictators and the Small The Fall of Democracy. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Ken, we talked very briefly before the break about the 1918 pandemic. And in back then, people were encouraged to wear masks, and we know that they made a difference then. I'm wondering if there are any other parallels you see today, or more importantly, any differences you see today in our response.
Yes, and let me start with the masks, because masks, of course, then were very different than the masks we have today. The virus was not understood then as we understand it today. First of all, in 1918, no one had ever seen a virus, too small to be seen by the technology of the day. They had the word, but they didn't really know what it was, much smaller than bacteria, which had been seen under a normal microscope. So masks were often made from gauze. Gauze is not a really effective way. They were used improperly. They weren't cleaned. People didn't even understand that just because you had a mask on doesn't mean you couldn't put your hands to your face. We know this now, that hand washing and touching your face are really important means of transmission. So the virus wasn't understood in 1918. But in San Francisco, which was a city that had very, very strict mask rules in the first wave, and that's an important thing to discuss here. They had very great success in keeping the infection rate and the mortality rate down. They relaxed too soon in November, and then it came raging back in December. And they tried to reenact the mask laws, but people weren't having it. So there were anti-mask societies. Some of it was religious, but some of it was just the same kind of reaction we see today somewhere in some places where people say, this is my freedom, you can't tell me what to do. This is a case where I say, and I don't mean it glibly, live free and die, because this is a freedom that you are not only risking yourself, but you are risking infecting other people, the people around you, the people in your community. So I think that that's a really interesting parallel to see, because San Francisco had exactly that experience. Strict laws, relaxed, a big spike, and very, very poor results after that. So that's an important lesson of history again.
I'm going to go to Clayton, calling from Sangerville. Hi, Clayton. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks. I tend to think that it's people's human nature, particularly here in Maine, to not like to be told what to do, whether they perceive it to be from a dictator or whether it's in their best interest or not. It just seems to me that people would generally resist anything like that that infringes on what they, you know, appear to be their, you know, their freedom or their right to make their own decisions on anything.
Kenneth, human beings don't like being told what to do.
Often that's true, but not always. And certainly, again, in American history, we look back at the two of the crises in the 20th century, World War I and World War II. Both times, rationing was put into effect. People were asked not only rationing, but also during the during First World War, Herbert Hoover, the future president, was for saving millions of lives around the world by establishing food distribution. He was asking people in the United States to have meatless Mondays and wheatless Wednesdays. People were asked to sacrifice and did, and it saved millions of lives. So I don't think that there is this natural resistance to all being asked to do all things. You know, we're asked to clean up after our dogs. Most people do it. It's a matter of public health. So I understand people's desiring freedom, but I think we also have, as citizens, responsibilities. And one of those responsibilities to make sure that we're not doing things that harm other people as well as ourselves.
An email from Joyce. I'm reading Isabel Wilkerson's book, Cast. Among the many shocking stories, she tells us how Hitler and the Nazi Party were very inspired by the Jim Crow white supremacy laws designed to control and persecute blacks in the South. Why haven't we been made more aware of this abhorrent connection?
Well, if you read Strong Man, you will be aware of that connection. Adolf Hitler, specifically in Mein Kampf, and I write about this in Strong Man in the chapter on Hitler, pointed to the United States as an example, as a model. And some of Germany's laws were modeled, for instance, on the miscegenation laws that existed in many American states that forbid intermarriage. Those laws lasted on the books in this country, by the way, until the 1960s in the Loving versus Virginia case that many people have heard about, and then became part of the rationale for allowing same-sex marriage. So we do have this dreadful legacy in the United States. The Jim Crow laws, which were aimed at segregation and also keeping blacks from voting in many parts of the country. So it is part of the dark legacy that we're having right now, a reckoning over the United States past, while we like to think of it as a beacon of freedom and opportunity, that if we want to be honest about our history, we have to take these things into account. And let me just say that by tearing this down, this is not unpatriotic. It's not disloyal. It's honest. It's accurate. And we have to tell the truth. This is what John Adams would have called the stubborn facts. Facts are stubborn things. And if we want to create that more perfect union that we're pledged to in the Constitution, we certainly have to take all that into account. That's certainly what I've tried to do in my books, from Don't Know Much About History on through In the Shadow of Liberty and now in Strong Man. Learn from the past to make a more perfect union.
We'll go to Constantino calling from Westbrook. Hi, Constantino. Go ahead.
Good morning to the both of you. In today's politically charged atmosphere, the words democracy and republic are used almost interchangeably. It's always been my understanding that isn't a republic a form of government, whereas democracy is an ideology that shapes how a government is run? Is that a correct assessment?
Well, they're very, very elastic terms because, for instance, we can look around the world and we can look at somewhere called the People's Republic of China. Certainly not a republic in the sense that we understand it. Yes, let me go back to those basic definitions I mentioned earlier. Democracy from the Greek, meaning of the people, power of the people. Republic from the Latin meaning of the people. So in essence, they are two related ideas. We do live in a republic, which means a representative democracy. But you can't separate democracy out from republic. We live in a democratic republic where the people ultimately do have the power in theory. And I'm also reminded, since we're talking about history today, Jennifer, and anniversaries, it is also the anniversary of the day that Abraham Lincoln spoke for 2.5 minutes or so in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and reminded us of the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And so it's a good day to go back and read the Gettysburg Address. It's only about 270 words. Most of them are pretty short. And he talked about what this country was supposed to stand for. And I think that they are words for eternity.
Kathy in Waldo. Kathy, we are really quick on time. So if you could be very brief, that'd be great.
Okay, quickly. Supreme Court, the Electoral College, and the fact that we were reminded in 2000 by the head of the Supreme Court at the time, who said, remember, people do not elect the president. The Electoral College elects the president, and they are, you know, picked by the states. So could you comment on that anachronism in a democracy?
Sure. Kenneth, I know you could talk about the Electoral College for an hour, but I'm giving you 30 seconds.
I hope we'll have an hour to discuss that some other time. The Electoral College was created because the Founding Fathers did not believe in democracy and did not believe the president should be elected by the people. They thought the people were incapable of that decision. On the other hand, they didn't want the legislature to do it, which is a parliamentary system. So they kind of punted this and came up with this idea of electors, a compromise, and sort of said to the states, you figure it out. So we have a sort of jury-rigged idea of how to elect the president. I personally believe that whatever rationale it had in 1787. The rationale no longer exists, and we should be rid of the Electoral College either through legislation, which is easier, or amending the Constitution, which would be difficult, if not impossible.
Kathy, thanks for bringing it up. And Ken, always such a pleasure to have you here. Kenneth C. Davis, a best-selling author. His very latest book, Strong Man, The Rise of Five Dictators and the Fall of Democracy. He's also the author of the Don't Know Much About History series and the Hidden History of the Spanish Flu. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Northeastern University's Rue Institute in Portland, announcing $100 million in scholarships for graduate programs. Enroll at roux.northeastern.edu.
And this is member-supported Maine Public Radio. Hello, I am Nick Woodward, TV production manager here at Maine Public, joined once again by Scott Marshaldon, Vice President and Chief Development Officer. And Scott, another fascinating Maine Calling. And I must say, I forgot this was the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. And really, when Kenneth brought up the famous quote, government, of the people, by the people, and for the people, it really shows you the importance of a democracy, how lucky we are to be here, and the importance of keeping that alive through conversation, information, and things like that. Things that public radio does for us so well, and that's why I think it's great for us to be celebrating right now.
And calling 1-800-866-1475. You can call that number, share your support for programming just like this. Nick, you couldn't be more right. Trusted at does all of those things for Maine Public. All gifts are generous. You decide what level of support that works for you. What matters now is that you call with your support or you go online at mainepublic.org.
1-800-866-1475. You can also text that to 800, text the word give to 800-866-1475, another easy way to show your support. Join the over 51,000 people that are supporting this service right now. Again, all gifts are generous. Whatever amount you can do, you're going to be doing something great. So whether you join with a one-time gift or you become an evergreen friend and make those ongoing monthly gifts of 10, 20, 50, 100, whatever the amount is up to you. The important thing is to know that you are helping to maintain this service that you depend on, that you appreciate. So whether it's Maine Calling, All Things Considered, Maine Public Classical, of course, Down Memory Lane, anything that you might be listening to or watching, you can know you can help support it and make it happen. So please call 1-800-866-1475 or head to mainepublic.org right now.
And Nick, your point, I think, is well made, that there is a variety of content, a variety of programming, really something for everyone. And we recognize that. And it was one of the reasons why we decided to start a whole new classical music station, classical music signals across our state. We have more work to do there. We want to continue to do more on the classical music side with our FM signals. Our hosts and things there have sounded terrific. They're growing out that network, and it's donor support that's made that happen. What that has allowed us to do, as you were discussing, is offer more variety on Maine Public Radio, on our news station. And that has been important, especially now with so many things to be covered, so many discussions to be had. We're able to deliver different segments, different programming now that can enrich in the things that we hear and that we understand. And it gives people more choice when they want to tune in and what they want to tune in. And of course, now in this digital age, they can get things when they want to get it, that's when it works for them. And it's your support that makes that happen. We appreciate it. If you've already made a gift, thank you. If you'd like to make a gift, now's the time to do that. You can go online at mainepublic.org. It's a secure site. Or you can call one of our operators at 1-800-866-1475. Nick?
Yeah, and keep in mind that because of social distancing, of course, we're all distant, and of course, the operators are not with us. So The fact you're not hearing the phones ring doesn't mean they're not. They are ringing off the hook because you, so many folks are calling into support. So don't think missing the phone, not hearing that phone ring means nobody's calling. They are. So thank you to everyone that's calling, who's clicking, who's texting. You are doing something great. You are helping to support this station that you depend on. When you got up this morning, did you turn on the radio on your kitchen windowsill? I did. When you hopped in the car and turned it on, the radio came on. Was it Maine Public Radio that came on? Was in my car. And it's with me all the time. It's part of my life. That's why I am a member. That's why I feel so great in supporting it. So what's your reason? And it's okay to be selfish, Scott. People can be doing it just for themselves. That's not a problem.
That's true.
But as
good
you said,
point.
You're going to do it for everyone. So whatever the reason, call 1-800-866-1475 or go to mainepublic.org right now.
We talk about these pledge drives as being sort of that old-fashioned barn raising where, you know, thousands of people are in a barn raising situation. You've got maybe upwards of 20, 25 people coming together and helping many hands make light work. And that's what we're doing here today. We were on air yesterday, and so many people have called in from across the state, from across the country even, sharing their support, standing up with Maine Public at a time where your support is so very much valued and appreciated. Maine Public works very hard to steward every dollar, every donation that comes in, and puts it to the very best use that we can. And we appreciate the donations that come in, and it's your support that allows us to do the things that we do. So call now, 1-800-866-1475.
You're right, Scott. Whether it's all the TV channels, all the digital channels, or all streaming channels, or one of these radio transmitters, such as WMEH Bangor 90.9, WMEA Portland 90.1, WMEP Camden 90.5, WMEM Presque Isle 106.1, WMED Callis 89.7, WMEW Waterville 91.3, or WMEF Fort Kent 106.5, or around the world on mainepublic.org, you help to make it possible, whether it's Maine Calling, whether it's Down Memory Lane, Maine Public Classical, Maine Public Television, Maine Public Digital, you help make it possible, and we thank you. Call 1-800-866-1475, and thank you.
Thanks so much.